Okay, well, I usually say this, so let's say it just to get started off. Turn with me, if you will, to the beginning of this week's Parsha, which starts in the book of Devarim, or Deuteronomy, chapter 3, almost to the end, and it starts in, actually, verse 23, and the first words here say, "And I besought Yahuwah at that time." Now, this is Moshe speaking. This is part of this speech that he's given towards the end of his life, right as the people of Yah, the B'nai Israel, the children of Israel, are fixing to enter the land, finally. And I besought, of course, the first word, so that is in Hebrew, Vayet Kanan, or maybe, and I pleaded is another way that you'll see that listed there. And what he pleads, we're going to talk about in just a second. But it occurred to me as I was putting together my notes for this evening and thinking about how to go through all of this. And as you know, on Friday nights, Erev Shabbat, I do try to tend to go through it pretty much in order and to hit all at least of the highlights. And there is a whole lot of meat in this one, if you know where we're headed, from the Ten Commandments to the Shema and a whole lot of stuff that has to do with idolatry and things that I will contend are absolutely central to why so much of us are feeling this heaviness, because there seems to be a whole lot of judgment coming down, and a lot of it is even described here. And that leads me to an observation that this is, for today, I will contend, one of the most important parshas, and that's not the way the Hebrew would work, right? Of all of them, when it comes to understanding where we are today. Because we are still in exile for cause, and essentially this portion lays it out in no uncertain terms. Actually, the next several kind of continue the theme. If people are coming out of ex-Christianity, out of the paganized, Romanized whore church, and yeah, I'll use those terms in this context especially, this is a place to take them. Tell them, start reading about Deuteronomy chapter 4. Go all the way through chapter 30 and ask yourself the question, why would you think he isn't pretty well PO'd at the Horan going on in the Sun God Day church? But it was this, and by the way, I've probably already tipped my hand a little bit, that caught my eye. After I had already started thinking about, you know, the notes and putting things together and so forth, I saw a piece on the All News Pipeline, and I look at them fairly frequently, from Susan Duclos. She's written a lot of decent articles. And this one said the following: Google has a new AI bot, new to artificial intelligence tool. Now, she refers to it as Skynet in the making, but the tool is actually called Perspective. Now, remember, Google is your CIA-inspired deep state operative program slash corporate entity that basically wants to tap and control everything you see, think about, and do, from YouTube to your Android operating system. It's all basically Google. They got their fingers and everything, and they're listening everywhere. If there is a Big Brother's ears and eyes, it's Google. So this isn't too surprising, but here's the kicker. This is why I put this together with where I'm going first. Wired Magazine, among others, was talking about this this tool. And the idea is that this new AI can immediately spit out an assessment. It looks at the web and it decides if what you're saying is politically incorrect. And it can automatically ban you, or moderate is the term, comments online and so forth. They'll be using this on YouTube, and they'll be using it on all kinds of other tools. Actually, already some of these things are being used. But the idea is this. Perspective has a metric, a little yardstick that it applies to things that it looks at based on keywords and phraseology and so forth, and it defines something with a toxic scale. And if a post is rated toxic, Achtung, we will not allow it! Und toxic, they say, is defined as either rude, disrespectful, or unreasonable comments that are, quote, likely to make you leave a discussion. Well, that is, if you're a snowflake, I think. And what the story goes on to say is that a number of folks, including an experiment conducted by the Conservative Tribune, started applying various comments to this AI bot and seeing what it would spit out. And essentially, they discovered that if there's a Bible passage that's ambiguous, in other words, you can't tell what it's really saying, or it doesn't seem to be particularly apropos, well, it doesn't rate very high on the toxic scale. But if it actually has something to do with, quote, religious beliefs, especially when it comes to marriage, infidelity, adultery, or other related issues, this particular AI robot or bot decides that they are, quote, highly toxic, right? To which all I can say is, surprise, surprise, surprise. Here's the one that caught my eye right out of this week's Torah portion. Thou shalt not commit adultery is 83% on the toxic scale. Verboten. You can't say something like that in polite company. Turns out there are other things, too, besides Bible verses, and they named a bunch of them here. Here's one. This is from, Revelation. The fearful, the unbelieving, the abominable, murderers, whoremongers, sorcerers, idolaters, liars will have their part in the lake of fire. Oops, that's an 86% toxic scale, verboten, and so forth. It turns out that there is a little bit of a discontinuity when it comes to racist statements. If you say, blacks have no rights, well, that's not quite as toxic as talking about things having to do with marriage or the Bible. That was 63% toxic. But if you take the same statement, flip it around, and say, whites have no rights, guess what? It's just fine. It's only 10% toxic. You can say that all day long. Can you see the pattern here? And as she puts it, anything that goes against perversion and what the globalists are pushing is toxic. So the Empire of Darkness now has Google playing the role of Skynet, which kind of sets up, again, let me just warn you now, most everything in this Torah portion is going to be highly toxic. Matter of fact, Google's bot will probably gag on it because it has to do with idolatry. And ultimately, we're talking about the very thing that Google worships, and they don't like that. I'll throw this story in, as long as I'm doing stories here briefly. A New Jersey court has ruled that at a public hearing, yeah, sure, on a mosque that they're going to slam down the public's throat. Basically, they've already determined that the mosque is going to be built. We're going to go through the motions, but we're going to gag people in advance as prior restraint against free speech is what the legal term is here, but the court doesn't seem to have any problem with that. They are going to allow people to comment as long as you realize that the words Islam or Muslims are verboten. You will not talk about those. And it turns out, though, that the Islamic Society of Basking Ridge, which wants to build the mosque and is associated with all kinds of wonderful organizations, like the Muslim Brotherhood, it would appear, and others, well, they have no problem making comments about Christians and Jews and their places of worship, but don't you dare say anything remotely distressing about, you know, the true religion. You see the pattern here. Well, with that as kind of a prologue, let's talk about the other things in this Torah portion. Again, it starts with Moshe saying he besought Yahuwah. And basically what he asks is, hey, I really would like to go into the land. Let me go on over there, I pray you. But he tells folks, I know Yahuwah was wroth with me for your sakes. He wouldn't listen to me. He said to me, let it suffice you. This is enough. Come on, man. Haven't you had a good enough life, basically? Speak no more to me of this matter. And then he's told, go on up to the top of Mount Pisgah, lift up your eyes. You can see the land, but you ain't going to go over the Jordan River. Instead, you're to charge Joshua, encourage him, strengthen him. He is the one that's going to lead the people over the river and into the land. All right, chapter 4 is where we get to the highly toxic stuff so far as Skynet and Google are concerned. Here now it says, O Israel, hearken, Shamar, O Israel, right? Sounds real familiar. We're going to get to the actual terminology that you're used to in two chapters. Hearken, listen, hear and obey the statutes and the ordinances. Now those words, of course, hukim and ha mishpatim, which I teach you, and do them that you may live. Go in and possess the land that Yahuwah Elohim of your fathers giving to you. We're going to see this theme throughout this portion, and I always emphasize it because I think it's so important. Do. Hear and do. Statutes and ordinances. Listen. Keep. Statutes, judgments, and commandments. Mitzvot, mishpatim, hukim. Those things are so key. Whenever I hear people say the law is done away with, as you know, folks, that's one good way to kind of get under my skin. Because, you know what? I think I read somewhere, let God be true and every man a liar. When I hear people lying through their teeth like that, telling me some piece of dog, you know what, like, Yeshua, no, they'll say Jesus did away with the law. I know they're liars and the truth is not in them, because he says so, they say it's so, the word says so over and over again, and to point that out, of course, the Google bot will say is toxic. Yahuwah himself says that not pointing it out is not correct, and furthermore, he warns, in no uncertain terms, we're going to see that for these next few Torah portions, that this is important. No, it's vitally important. This is life-rendering stuff. Now, what's also interesting is these first few verses here. If you remember a certain puppet character from Star Wars, George Lucas, as it turns out, was actually raised Jewish. And if you listen to Yoda, you'll hear a lot of the rabbis in Yoda. There is no try, only do. Okay? There is no try, only do. And that's precisely what this says. There is no try, only do. Hear, listen, obey, hearken, and do, so that you may live. Now, verse 2 in this chapter is one of my favorites. It's one of the things that gets repeated twice in the book of Devarim, and it's also the last commandment in Scripture. Check it out. It says anybody that tries to do this, adding to or subtracting from, well, they get added to or subtracted from the book of life. So it's serious. You shall not add unto the word which I command you, neither shall you diminish from it, take away from it. So, why? So that you may keep the commandments of Yahuwah, your El, which I command you, shamar, and keep his commandments. Look, he says, y'all have seen what happened to Baal Peor, the people who followed after that particular fake god were destroyed from the midst of you. Those of you who cleave unto Yahuwah, your El, are alive, each of you, this day. Behold, he says, I've taught you statutes and ordinances, even as Yahuwah, my El, commanded me, so that you may, what? Do in the midst of the land that you go in to possess. Now, Rashi, in verse 6, points out that this is the essence of wisdom. How do you know what wisdom is? It's not just hearing, it's doing. So listen. Observe, therefore, and do them, these statutes, judgments, and commandments, for this is your wisdom and your understanding in the sight of the peoples. And this is kind of interesting, too. Basically, to my mind, this one is a really fascinating verse. In the sight of the peoples, we're to do these things. So that, I guess you might say, by our fruit we will be known by the other nations, the goyim. Says here in this one, if we do this, people will see, and surely they will say, this is a great nation of a wise and understanding people. Now, I'll make one more suggestion. We've talked a little bit tonight about there's this spirit of heaviness people are sensing. A whole lot of understanding of the fact that things are coming to a head. And I will contend, you know what? There was a time when people would look at the United States and they would see a nation of law and not of men. They would see a nation whose very founding principles say we hold these truths to be self-evident. There is a God. He created us, and it's He that has given us rights and responsibilities. The purpose of government is to secure these rights. And then they put these restrictions in place, saying, when it comes to things that have to do with faith and worship of the true God, Congress shall make no law, period. Well, that was a long time ago. And here we are. I'm going to suggest that verse 6 no longer applies to America with a K, because they no longer observe and do. This is no longer wisdom and understanding in the sight of the peoples. Surely, this is a great nation, a wise and understanding people. That was true. May it be true again. May we come out of that nation which is no longer great, no longer understanding, no longer wise, and no longer obedient. The next verse asks a question that really ought to help solidify all this. What great nation is there that has Elohim so nigh unto them that the Elohim, Yahuwah Eloheka, is whensoever we call upon him? He dwelt among them. They called upon him and he was there. You know what? I think there was a time when it could be argued that America called upon him. And nowadays, he's, of course, not even welcome in the schools. or just about anywhere else. And, well, they don't call upon him. Take heed to yourself, says the next verse. Keep your soul diligently, lest you forget these things which your eyes saw, lest they depart from your heart all the days of your life, and lest you fail to do what you ought to do, which is to make them known unto your children and to your children's children. And that speaks volumes. Of course, they saw things, and the children that are, for the most part, listening to this, that weren't quite 20 when their parents made the fatal mistake of the first democratic vote in recorded human history, and it was wrong. They voted against God, and it cost them their lives. Their carcasses fell in the wilderness. Well, at least they heard the stories of the crossing of the Red Sea. Some of them would have seen it as children. They stood before Elohim. Well, we've got many generations in there, but arguably we should have still had a witness, and for the most part, much of not just this nation, but the world has forgotten those things. He tells them about how, remember the mountain, Yahuwah spoke to you out of the midst of the fire. You heard the voice of words, but you didn't see a form, only a voice. He declared his covenant to you, which he commanded you to perform. The 10 words, sayings, Deborim. Aserat HaDeborim, literally the 10 words of the 10 sayings. He wrote them upon those two tablets of stone, and Yahuwah then commanded me at that time, and we're still supposed to be doing this, to teach you statutes and ordinances. Here it's Hukim and Mishpatim, so that you might, all right, say it with me, folks, do them in the land that you're fixing to head over and go and possess. Take heed, he says, you didn't see any manner of form on that day that he spoke to you out of the fire. What's the point? Idolatry. You heard the voice. You didn't see any form. You didn't have to have a golden calf or some other representation. You didn't have to have a little man on a stick or anything else, or a merry doll or anything else to intercede for you. He forbids those things. Why, it says? Well, lest you deal corruptly and do that exact same. Make a graven image, form of any figure, likeness of male or female, or beasts on the earth, winged fowls in the heaven, or anything that creeps on the ground, or fish in the water under the earth. I guess that, does that apply to the papal, Pope Kami fish hat of Dagon, right? The great god Dagon, the fish god? It would seem. That's just my opinion, but it does seem to be consistent with Scripture here. Lest you lift up your eyes to heaven, see the sun, moon, stars, all the hosts of heaven, be drawn away and worship them, serve them. But you, he says, have been taken out of that iron furnace, out of Mitzrayim, to be his people, an inheritance, just as you are this day. May we still remember that we are supposed to be that. Now, he was angered with me, says Moshe, for your sakes. He swore I wasn't going to get to go over the Jordan into that good land that he's giving you. I'm going to have to die over here, folks. So take heed to yourselves, lest you forget the covenant that he made with you, and do that. And indeed, as you know, they did, and many others did, and still are. We're still seeing the fruits of that particular failure, because we're still in exile. Don't make a graven image, likeness of anything which he has forbidden you. For Yahuwah, your El is, are you ready? Elkanah. This is almost in the form of a name, like El Shaddai, all-sufficient one. This is Elkanah, a jealous El. He doesn't like the paganism that permeates Western society, paganist churchianity, and so forth. When you beget children, and your children's children, and you'll have been in the land for a long time, you might start dealing corruptly. And matter of fact, he says you will. Make a graven image, the form of anything, and do that which is evil in the sight of Yahuwah, your El, and provoke him. So he says, look, I'm going to call heaven and earth as witness against you this day. Those same witnesses, folks, are still there. Yeshua invoked them too, saying that nothing, not a single yod or tittle of the stuff that he was literally coming and teaching in the flesh, starting with Moshe and going through the prophets, has yet passed away. Not one word. But he says, I call those witnesses as witnesses against you this day, that you'll soon utterly perish from the land that you go over Jordan to possess. You'll not prolong your days upon it, but be utterly destroyed. And Now, this part is fascinating. Listen carefully. I'm going to go through this in a little bit closer, not even so much paraphrase, word for word. And Yahuwah will scatter you among the peoples, and you'll be left few in number among the nations, whither Yahuwah shall lead you away. And there, he says, you shall serve other gods, the work of men's hands, wood, stone, which neither see nor hear nor eat nor smell. Now, here I pause, because it's interesting. There's a lot of midrash on this, and I think it's kind of worthy to talk about in this context now. Basically, the sages have said, look, here's what he's saying. The penalty for worshiping other gods, for being an idolater, is you're going to have to worship other gods and be an idolater. Does that make sense? Well, it kind of does. But Rashi says, understand this. The word here is serve. And the work of men's hands. And what he's saying is, when you're scattered, it's not just that you get scattered because of idolatry. It's that you are in bondage because of the idolatry. And in bondage to the same idolators who convinced you to do this stupid thing and make the idols themselves. So it's slavery, if you will, repeated, and it's on two levels. Slavery to the idols and slavery to the ones who serve the idols. From there, though, and this is why I think this is so important, why I've been spending so much time going through this in so much detail. From there, he says, you will seek Yahuwah Eloheka, and you will, shall, affirmatively, guaranteed, find him. Does that sound familiar? Seek, and ye shall find. If, says Moshe, you search for him with all your heart and with all your soul. Those terms are going to appear several times tonight, as you already know. Seek and ye shall find, if you seek with all your heart and with all your soul. Here we are, folks, scattered among the peoples, few in number, serving other gods. We got all kinds of fake gods running around today. We got idolatry. We got people that don't realize that they're already in bondage to a whole lot of idolatry, including the gods of the almighty state. And if you don't think people serve the almighty state, ask them which they fear more, God or the IRS. Who's really listening to your prayers? Is it God or is it NSA? Who hears all, sees all, knows all? There's a whole lot of folks, that believe that the gods of the three-letter agencies and the gods that live in Washington and Madison Avenue and Hollywood are the ones that really run their lives. And if you look at their actions, it's kind of hard to argue that they behave that way. But it tells us this, in your distress, when all of these things are come upon you, in the end of days, be acharit hayom, hayamim, plural. Be'acharit hayamim. Have you heard that term in the Hebrew? In the end of days. Are we there yet? As the old joke goes, well, we may not be quite there, but we can smell it from here. We can see that it's coming. We can certainly see a lot of elements coming together. In the end of days, he says, you will return, make teshuvah to Yahuwah Eloheka, and you will hearken unto his voice. And to my mind, I know there are people that think that's scary. And I say, no, that's a phenomenal promise. Seek and you will find. But not only that, in the end of days, we will return and hearken. Because it says he is a merciful El. He will not fail us, nor destroy us, nor forget the covenant of our fathers, which he swore unto them. For ask now the days past before you, since the day that Elohim created man upon the earth and from one end of the heavens to the other, where has there been any such thing as great as this, or anything that's been heard like it? Did a people ever truly hear the voice of El speaking out of the midst of the fire, as you've heard, and live? Or has Elohim essayed to go and take from him for himself a nation from the midst of another nation by trials, signs, wonders, war, by a mighty hand, an outstretched arm, and great terrors, according to all that he did for you in Mitzrayim before your eyes? He tells us why. It was shown that you might know Yada intimately, firsthand, that he is Elohim, Yahuwah. There is none other beside him. Now, to my mind, what is really interesting about that in the context of all of the flow here, in these acharit hayamim, in the end of days, you will seek, you will find, you will return, you will hearken to his voice. And then it says, anybody else ever hear him speaking out of the midst of fire? Anybody else see these miracles and be delivered from bondage? Well, you know, there's another promise. And it's infused in these words, and it's explicitly listed from Moshe and other places in Scripture about an even greater regathering to come. Be'acharit ha-yamim, at the end of days. And we're looking forward to that. I pray that we will see it. And what this is basically, to my mind, reminding us is that, there might even be greater wonders. We've been told even greater things than this we will see. Out of heaven he made you hear his voice, that he might instruct you. Upon earth he made you to see his great fire. You heard his words out of the midst of the fire. Because he loved your fathers, chose their seed after him, brought them out of his presence, with his presence, with his great power out of Egypt, and to allow you to drive out nations from before you, greater and mightier than you, and bring you into the land as an inheritance, as it is this day. To know, again, yada, intimately, to lay it at your heart that Yahuwah, he is Elohim in heaven above, and there is no one else, nor on earth beneath. So, what does all this mean? You shall keep, shamar, hear and obey, hearken. You shall keep his statutes, huk, is the single form there, hukim, and his mitzvotim, which I command you this day. Might go well with you and your children after you, and prolong your days upon the land which he gives you forever. Now let's pause there. Go back and make one other observation on all of the volumes, the incredible amount of meat in this parsha. A lot of it focused on this idea of idolatry. There is one, and there is no other beside him, period. But not quite end of story. So what? Well, there is a theme that permeates these three chapters, 4, 5, and 6 in Devarim. And literally, you can block his speech into consistent units, and they basically all have these little sub-speeches have this kind of a format to them. Essentially, it says, listen. And then it says, listen or hearken. And then it says at the end, you shall keep. So basically, he lays it out with this kind of bracket form. Listen, hearken to these things, and then at the end it says, and you shall keep these things, statutes, judgments, and commandments. Over and over again, statutes, judgments, and commandments. Sometimes it's two out of the three, but we get the picture. And what's fascinating is, if you look now at chapter 4, 5, and 6, we'll see a similar, not quite congruent or identical pattern, but similar. Chapter 4, do. Hear, listen, here they are, do. Avoid the idolatry especially. Chapter 5. The next chapter is one we're coming to. Oh, there's a teeny bit in between here. It says there's a separation. Now, why does this appear in here? Moses then separated three cities beyond the Jordan toward the sunrise, so that there are places for the manslayer to flee. These are the cities of refuge. And it reminds us, this is not for murderers. This is not for people that commit arcicide upon others, or that would basically be well-placed in Washington. No, these are cities of refuge for people that do something by accident and somebody dies. And it tells where they are, and this is the Torah which Moshe set before the children of Israel. These are the testimonies, the statutes, and the ordinances. It's interesting that this summary comes there with this idea about these cities of refuge for the manslayer who kills, but not on purpose. Somehow or other, folks, I think that there's a lesson for us in that, too, when you look at this world today and see so many people that intend to kill. They're working up to it. They're planning it. They're literally lusting for it. And there's no city of refuge for them. Chapter 5 says, Moshe called unto Kol Israel, all of them. And he says, Shamar, Shema Yisrael, hear, O Israel, the statutes and the ordinances which I speak into your ears this day, that you may learn them and observe to do them. There's the word shamar again. There's the listen, and to the statutes and judgments and commandments. For what purpose? To do. Begins the section. Yahuwah our El cut, literally, karat, cut a covenant with us in Horeb. He didn't make this with just our fathers, but with us, even us, all of us who are here alive this day. In other places, he reminds us that includes those of us who were alive via our seed of our fathers, 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 fathers that were there that day. Yahuwah spoke with you face to face out of the fire. I stood between him and you at that time to declare the word of Yahuwah. You were afraid. You didn't go up on the mountain. But here's what he said. Now, at this point, folks, we're going to get a repetition, Devarim, of the ten sayings, the things that he says. And I will probably read a good portion of them. A lot of times, traditionally, you know, people will read the whole thing and stand for this. So you're welcome to do that if you'd like. But we're gonna go through it at least in order and in large part. Ani, or actually the word here is not Ani Yahuwah, it's Anki Yahuwah. And they're very similar, but in the commandments he uses the Anki form. It means I am that I am, Anki Yahuwah Eloheka. And by now I hope most of you have heard the Hebrew enough that when we hear that, we just plain know what it means. I am Yahuwah, your El, your God. Anki Yahuwah Eloheka, who brought you out of the land of Mitzrayim, out of the house of bondage. You shall have no other so-called gods, no other Elohim, mighty ones before me. Now pause there, because this is one of those places, and I do, and I say this every time I go through it, I do like the Midrashic, the Hebraic, even the Orthodox Jewish, if you will, understanding of this phrase. Remember, in Hebrew, there aren't any punctuation marks. And sometimes, I got a good friend that's a rabbi, says, well, you know, we count these differently than Christians do. He teaches there ought to be a period there. After Anki Yahuwah Eloheka. I am Yahuwah your El. Period. Now, they will, of course, say either Adonai or Hashem, depending upon whether they're reading the verse in total or not. But the point is, that's the commandment. Just know it. Yada, that. He is. Period. And the rest of this, and this is Rabbi Lord Jonathan Sachs points this out, kind of sounds like the form of the ancient covenant, too, because it describes who it is that it's making the covenant and the background and the why. And there it is. I am Ani Yahuwah Elohim, who brought you out of the land of Egypt, out of the house of bondage. Therefore, you can see it. You are to have no other so-called Elohim before me. Call it two, even if you want. Know the first one, yada, that he is who he says he is. Number two, therefore, do, number two in some countings, therefore, you shall not make, thou shalt not make unto yourself a graven image, any manner of likeness, anything in the heavens above, earth beneath, water under the earth. Don't bow to them. Don't serve them. Ani Yahuwah, I am. It says, actually, for I am a jealous El. We've just heard that terminology. Visiting the iniquity of the fathers upon the children to the third and fourth generation of them that hate me, and showing mercy unto the thousandth generation of them that love me and keep my commandments. The next line is one that people argue about, and I'm going to tell you what, folks. I don't believe for a second that this is, and I'm going to do it just to illustrate it. You can hear the intake of breath. This does not mean you're not allowed to say the words, God damn, because that's not his name, and it's not taking his name in vain, especially if people don't even know his name. Isn't that ironic? We got people who are so removed from Scripture, they don't even know his name, and I will contend that, you know what? Not knowing his name, but thinking you do, is probably closer to taking his name in vain, ignoring it, making it, bringing it to nothing, than saying some stupid thing, like invoking a title, and any Elohim will do, I guess, and saying, damn it, afterwards. There's a lot of ways that you can do wrong things. But I do tend to think that not understanding what the commandment is and what it means to take his name in vain. Well, let me ask it this way. If you say that he did away with his own law, can't be trusted, and you're calling him a liar and saying the truth is not in him, isn't that kind of like taking his name in vain? I tell you, it's worse than saying something silly like, God damn it. And there are a whole lot of other ways to do it, too. But if we understand that when a Hebraic-speaking person or the Hebraic language uses a concept like taking a name in vain, you have to understand what it means to come in the name of first, with the power of agency, power of attorney, as a representative thereof. If you represent him, claiming to come in his name, and then make him a liar, break your word, I'd say go back and reread this one and ask what it means when it says, because Yahuwah will not hold him guiltless that takes his name in vain. The next one is another one of these two that, well, because it's done away with, you know, you can't trust him, take his name in vain, don't even know his name, don't know what he wrote, and don't even know that he said, this is my Sabbath. Keep it throughout your generation and all your dwelling places, period. Amen. It puts it this way here in the Ten Deborim. Observe, shamar, right? The Sabbath day, to keep it set apart. Kadosh, holy. As Yahuwah your El commanded you. 6 days you work, do all your work the seventh day. Does that mean Sun God Day? Isn't that taking his name in vain? The seventh day is a Sabbath unto Yahuwah Eloheka. In that you're not to do any manner of work, not you nor your son or your daughter, your maidservant, your manservant, your ox, your ass, your cattle, any stranger within your gates, that your manservant and your maidservant may rest as well as you. Get the picture here? Who is in authority over the house? The head of the house is the one that's responsible for saying, not your son, your daughter, your animals, or those people who are bonded to you, bound to you, or employees to you. All of you are supposed to rest on that day. And then it says this. Now, this is interesting because it's different than the exposition we get of the same Deborim, almost identically, but not quite, in Exodus chapter 20. Remember, it says, you were a servant in the land of Mitzrayim. Yahuwah, your El, brought you out by a mighty hand and an outstretched arm. Therefore, Yahuwah, your El, commands you to keep the Sabbath day. Dare I suggest that there's an implication here? That if we forget, and that seems to be what's happened, that we end up back in bondage? And that whether we serve the idols or the idolators or the gods that they represent, one way or the other, we end in bondage. And maybe we end up serving the sun god on sun god day or whatever. Can you see the pattern here? If we fail to shamar, hear, hearken, observe, and then do, it gets serious fast. And, of course, it's built up over a period of thousands of years to where we find ourselves today, still in exile. Honor your father and your mother, as Yahuwah El has commanded you, that your days may be long and that it may go well with you upon the land which Yahuwah has given you. People will point out, especially even the first time through, this is the commandment that has a blessing associated with it. Your days may be long. Then we get three commandments in a row that are basically bang, 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 two words each. Lo tirtzach. Lo, okay, we know what that means. That means don't, or no. And so literally this first one is no murder. King James says, thou shalt not murder. Lo tirtzach. The next word, ve, which means and, ve lo tinaf. Lo tinaf. Oh, don't go committing adultery. Let me make one quick comment and we'll move on. Understand that the definition of that word is an act of sex with a married woman, not one's wife. In terms of the Hebrew understanding, it takes a married woman to commit adultery. And we're not to do it. It is forbidden. Finally, ve lo tignav. Tignov. Thou shalt not steal. No stealing. Now, here's one that's kind of interesting. You will occasionally hear the rabbis say, we're already going to get a command coming up. about coveting. That is the general case. Don't covet any of these things. Whole list of them follows. What is covet? Covet is to lust for. What is the implication? And Yeshua points this out in the Sermon on the Mount. If you've done something in your heart, you've already done it. Well, that's the whole essence of what covet means. What's the predecessor to stealing something? Coveting it. If the coveting it is forbidden, doesn't it make sense that actually going and following through on it is also forbidden? Okay? Makes logical sense to me. In other words, we're already seeing a commandment coming up that says don't steal. So the sages will say, in particular, don't steal somebody's children either. The root word about thou shalt not steal also includes kidnapping. So, for those that would say, oh, that's not in here. Yeah, it's in here. No murder, no adultery, no kidnapping. And if you got any doubt, neither shall you bear false witness against your neighbor. And finally, nor are you to covet anything, not your neighbor's wife. Hey, we have a forbidden adultery already. Can we see the connection here? It's not redundant. We're not to covet. So for those that would say, oh, see, Jesus raised the bar by saying you're not even to look at a woman. Well, it's a married woman that we're talking about. That's the key understanding. He's not raising the bar at all. He's explaining precisely what it says here and has said here since Moshe. Don't commit adultery and don't even lust after your neighbor's wife. Because it leads in the same direction. Same thing goes for all these other things, which end up being forbidden in terms of stealing. Nor do you covet your neighbor's house, his field, his manservant, his maidservant, his ox, his ass, or anything that is your neighbor's. These words, it says, Yahuwah spoke unto all your assembly in the mountain, out of the midst of the fire, the cloud, the thick darkness, with a great voice, till it went on no more. And he wrote them upon those two tablets of stone, gave them to me. Came to pass, he reminds them, when you heard that voice out of the midst of the darkness, mountain burning with fire, you came and you basically said, holy cow! No, the holy cow was earlier. And it wasn't holy. And it wasn't for him. Well, basically they said, look, this is scary. Yahuwah has shown us his glorious greatness. We've heard his voice. We've seen this day. El speaks with man and he lives. Now, why should we die? Now, why should we die here? This great fire will consume us. We just don't want to hear this anymore. I guess you'd say Google would call it toxic, not wanting to hear things that he wrote or spoke. They were afraid they were going to die. Who is there of all flesh that's heard the voice of the living El speaking out of the fire as we haven't lived? So, basically, they told Moshe, look, you do this from here on out. You go listen to him. Tell him what. Tell us what he says so we can hear it. And do it. What does Moshe say? You know, that's not a bad idea. Yahuwah heard the voice of your words when you spoke unto me, and he said to me, I have heard the voice of the words of the people, what they have spoken to you, and that's okay. Oh, that they had such a heart as this always, to fear me, to keep all of my commandments, that it might be well with them and with their children forever. So he said, go tell them, head on back to your tents. As for you, Moshe, you stand here, I'll speak to you the commandments and the statutes and the ordinances, ha mitzvot, ha mishpatim, ha hukim, and you'll teach them so they can go do these things in the land that I'm giving them to possess. You shall observe to do, therefore, as Yahuwah has commanded. You don't turn. This is another one of those metaphors. Terminologies that is repeated throughout Scripture. Don't turn, don't veer into the ditch, to the right or to the left. Walk, though, in the way that Yahuwah has commanded you, that you might live and be well with you, and prolong your days in the land which you go into possess. And we end up in chapter 6 at this point. Again, the third of three sections. We've had the do in general, avoid idolatry, do the things he commands. Then we get the 10 Deborim. Now we're going to get basically the one that Yeshua called the most important, the greatest commandment. Now it says this, Vezot, this is ha-mitzvah, the statutes, plural, ha-hukim, and the ordinances, plural, ve-ha-mishpatim, which Yahuwah has commanded to teach you, that you may go do them that you're going over to possess. You might fear Yahuwah, keep all his statutes and his commandments, you, your son, your son's son, all the days of your life. Again, why? So your days can be prolonged. So therefore, hear, O Israel, Shema Israel, and observe to do it. You notice that we've heard this kind of prefaced several times. Therefore hear, and do, might be well with you. And then finally, in verse 4, we get the verse that everybody recognizes, because we do it every week, as the greatest commandment, Shema Yisrael. And it goes like this. Shema Yisrael, Yehuah Eloheinu, Yehuah Echad, Vehavta et Yehuah Eloheka, Vekol Levavka, Vekol Nefeshka, Vekol Meodeka. You shall love. Well, let's start in the beginning. Shamar, right? Hear, hearken, and obey, O Israel. Yahuwah, our El, is Echad. And you shall love Yahuwah, your El, with all your heart, and with all your soul, and with all your might. And these words which I command you to this day shall be in your heart. Teach them to your children. When you sit in your house, when you walk by the way, when you lie down, when you rise up, bind them for a sign upon your hand. They shall be as frontlets between your eyes. You write them on the doorposts of your house. Now remember that word? Seeing the little mezuzah on the door? And that's the word. Write them on the doorposts, the mezuzah of your house and upon your gates. And it shall be when Yahuwah, your El, brings you into the land that he swore to your fathers, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, to give you, great and goodly cities that you did not build, houses full of all good things which you did not fill, cisterns hewn out which you didn't hew, vineyards and olive gardens and trees that you didn't plant, that you shall eat and be satisfied. Now, I want to pause here because I heard a great commentary on this. Essentially right after the Shema. Deuteronomy 6:11. It shall be. You're going to have all these cities, right? Remember, the people that are in there are going to be vomited out. They failed. They fell into idolatry. Out of here. And then what? You basically are going to take over the land. Houses filled with stuff which you didn't fill. Cisterns, gardens, vineyards, olive trees. You didn't plant them. You'll eat and be satisfied. And the comment was this. Think about a child that is raised up in a great house. Ideally, this is what we provide to our children. You raise them up in a house. Teach them the way that they should go. That is the theme that permeates all of this. Teach children so that they remember, not forget. It's going to be the next verse. So they don't forget who done this for them. Can you see the pattern? We are, in fact, seeing people being brought into the land by their father, just like a child is in a house. You all are going to go into this land. You didn't build these houses. You didn't plant these vineyards. You didn't have to hew out these cisterns. You just get to enjoy them, just like a little child does who grows up surrounded with good things to eat and be satisfied. Wow. You shall fear Yahuwah Eloheka. Him you shall serve in his name. By his name you shall swear. Do not go after other gods, the gods of the people around you, because he is, right? Kana, jealous El, in the midst of you, lest the anger of Yahuwah be kindled against you and he destroy you from the face of the earth. You shall not try Yahuwah the way you've done before, like in Massah. Or the water incident, one of several. You will diligently shamar, keep, the commandments of Yahuwah, his testimonies, his statutes that he's commanded you, and one more time. You notice the theme? Hear, listen, shamar, observe, obey, do. Statutes, judgments, commandments, over and over and over and over again. Teach your children, raise them up in a house. You're going to go into a land, you didn't make these things, but you're going to get to enjoy them. Children ought to be raised up knowing the same thing. And you'll be able to thrust out all your enemies from before you, just as he's promised. When your son asks you in this time to come, saying, what do all this stuff mean? These testimonies, statutes, ordinances, which Yahuwah, our El, has commanded you? Well, then you say to your son, we were Pharaoh's bondmen. He brought us out with a mighty hand, showed us signs and wonders, and sore, great and sore wonders upon Egypt, upon Pharaoh, upon all of his house, and before our eyes. And he brought us out of there. Gave us this land, just as he had sworn to our fathers to do. And Yahuwah commanded us to do all of these statutes to fear Yahuwah our Elohim for our good always, that he might preserve us alive, just as it is to this day. And it shall be righteousness unto us if we observe to do this mitzvot, these commandments, these statutes, these judgments, as he has commanded us. We go into chapter 7 for the wrap-up. And I'm gonna just summarize what we're gonna see here this way. Probably talk about this in some more detail tomorrow. But as you know, there's a lot of meat here, and I've already gone on just getting through this in a reasonable amount of detail for longer than I usually try to. But it's important, and it's central. And when we talk about the news in a while, you'll see the connection. When Yahuwah brings you into the land that you possess, going to be lots of folks that are going to be cast out. Hittites, Girgashites, Amorites, Canaanites, Perizzites, Hivites, Jebusites, seven nations greater and mightier than thou. But he will deliver them up before you, smite them, utterly destroy them, and make, cut, karat, no brit, no covenant with them. This one, Joshua falls a bit short on with the Gibeonites, if you remember the story. Do not make any treaty with the inhabitants of the land. Make no covenant with them. Do not make marriages with them either, not your daughter to their sons or vice versa. Because if you do, and they did, and he was right, they'll turn away your son from following me to serve other gods, and he will be some kind of PO'd about that. All hindsight, 2020 at this point. Now, here's how he tells them, and I usually point out, if you go through there, and I've got all the highlights in my own Hebrew version here of this understanding. Here's what you're going to do, it says, and I'll just read it straight, and then we'll talk about it just for a second. Ye shall break down their altars, dash in pieces their pillars, hew down their Asherim, their poles, and burn their graven images with fire. The key here is these are all action verbs, right? Do, do, do. You get the point? But it's not just action verbs. Hebrew has an interesting conjugation called the piel conjugation, which is emphatic. In other words, you can break something. That would be one form of the same root word or verb. Or you can smash it! And that's the piel form. And basically, if you thought it was, one thing to break it, it's something else, a little more energetic, emphatic. To smash it to smithereens. And that's the terminology that's used here. It gives us a demonstration of how serious he is about dealing with idolatry. And I will contend, and we're going to see this in the rest of chapter 7 and throughout chapters 12 and 13, he, folks, detests, hates idolatry. I'm going to say something with some pretty crude terminology. You really want to piss off the creator of the universe? Take the most important event in human history, say the sacrifice of his son, the Torah made flesh, and rename it after a pagan goddess. Celebrate it with things he says are supposed to be smashed, broken in pieces, hewn down, and burned. And then, again, that's not enough. So bring the eggs into the house, bring the bunnies into the house, bring the Christmas trees. No. And I'll say it bluntly, hell no. Understand the level of terminology that's used here. Why it is it was so important that we were to teach our children, and why it is that we are where we are, because they failed, and we didn't learn the lesson, and still, indeed, in many cases, haven't. Now, that's part of what we need to do. That's, I think, our mission as people, is to speak the truth boldly as we ought to speak. Don't mince words. Don't be silent when we ought to speak up. Blow the shofar when we see the sword coming upon the land. And when we look and see what's going on today, and when we recognize, you know what, there's a whole lot of people worshiping pagan gods and saying, oh, he knows my heart. You're damned right he does. And I'll say it again, you're damned right he does. And that's the problem. Because the human heart is still desperately wicked. That's why we're still in exile, because we haven't learned this lesson. It's why this is so emphatic and so important. Here's how you're to deal with this paganism, he says. Break down their altars, dash in pieces their pillars, hew down their Asherim, and burn their graven images with fire. You're supposed to be a set-apart people unto Yahuwah Eloheka. He's chosen you. Not just the Jews. That's one tribe out of 12, folks. There are a whole lot of lost tribes, 10 of them, as a matter of fact, that were also part of Kol Israel that are still in exile for cause. And they would say they're Gentiles. Well, if they claim the term Gentile, understand they're claiming themselves to be pagan. And maybe we shouldn't argue with that. But they can still turn and understand that the paganism needs to be crushed out of us so that we can be what we're supposed to have been, a set-apart people unto Yahuwah, His own treasure out of all the peoples upon the face of the earth. He reminds us, and again, He is not talking to just one tribe. He's talking to the assembled mixed multitude. Not just the 12 tribes that came from the loins of Yaakov, but also those like Caleb that came out voluntarily and were grafted in. And that can apply to anybody who chooses to choose Him. He didn't set His love upon you nor choose you because there were so many of you. Indeed, you were the fewest of peoples. But because Yahuwah loved you, because He would keep the oath that He swore to your fathers. He brought you out of bondage with a mighty hand, redeemed you out of the house of bondage from the hand of Pharaoh. So know, therefore, yada, that Yahuwah, your El, He is El, faithful. He keeps covenant and mercy with them that love Him and keep, what? And. That and word there is key. And keep His commandments to 1,000 generations. And He repays them that hate Him to their face to destroy them. He will not be slack to them that hate Him. He will repay him to His face. Words to remember as we look and see what's happening in the world. So, therefore, you can almost, even without reading it, you know how this is going to end, right? Same way it begins. Therefore, you shall keep the commandment and the statutes and the ordinances, mitzvot, hukim, mishpatim, which I command you this day to do them.